Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our Three Ideas in 30 Minutes post-Pesach edition, Parshas Shemini. We are going to have three ideas. Two of them are going to have to do with the same subject, so I split them up a little bit, both having to do with pigs. Here we go. Idea number one. Idea number one is the halacha of a pig. So we know that in order to be kosher, you have to fulfill two different criteria. On the one hand, it's got to chew his cud. On the other, it has to have the split hooves.
Is there meat in the
chulent? There is meat in the chulent. Kosher meat in the chulent. Okay, here we go. So the source number one is from the Bas Ayin. And the Bas Ayin tells us the following. V'hu geira lo yagar. That means that it does not chew its cud. We know that a pig, as opposed to the fact that it has split hooves, it has one of the kosher symbols, it does not have the second kosher symbol, namely, it does not chew its cud. So here the Bas Ayin quotes from the Or HaChaim, and he says that this halacha of not chewing its cuds, tanai hu bedavar, which means it's a condition. Kolzman, turn the page, shehu lo yagar, as long as the pig is not chewing its cud, then it's not going to be kosher. Ava la'asi lavo, but in the future, yahala geira v'yachzer lios mutter, so the pig is going to return, and the pig is once again going to be kosher. And that's what the Chazal said. Lama nikra shmo chazir. Why is a pig called a chazir? She'asid lachzor lios mutter. So every time a parent calls his child a chazir when he takes too much food, just remember that it's lachzor. That even I'm on the return, I'm going to do tshuva. It's only because Moshe's here tonight. Okay? So that's the Or HaChaim quotes the Basai. That the pig, on the one hand, has split hooves. On the other hand, doesn't chew its cud. Because it doesn't chew its cud, therefore, it's not going to be kosher. But says the Or HaChaim, Lasid Lavo, the Chazir is going to be Yachzor. He's going to do tshuva, so to speak. It's going to once again chew its cud, and therefore, it's going to be kosher. Ask the Bias Ayin, hashkafically, in other words, in the realm of Avodas Hashem, what is this halacha of the Or HaChaim coming to teach us? And therefore, says the Bias Ayin the following, Lahavin Zeh Al Derech Avoda. In order to understand this, he says the following. Perish. Sheyesh b'nei adam shemares atzmo livnei adam b'chal kalos lishono eichshu oavam. Avalibo bali mahem. Look at the pig, says the Bas Ayin. On the one hand, externally, what does it look like? It looks like it is kosher. Internally, it's not kosher. Says the Bas Ayin, that's how some people are. Some people on the outside, they're one way, but on the inside, they're another way. On the outside, they might look pious, they might shuckle a lot, they might look the part, but they're inside, they might not have good midos, they might not be a good person. They might come up to you and say, hey, buddy, how you doing? And put their arm around you, but on the inside, they harbor hatred against you. And therefore, he says, that's what we can learn from the chazir, that's what we can learn from the pig, that on the outside, the pig was completely kosher. It's on the inside where it's not chewing its cud, that's where the pig is going to show that it's not kosher. And he says that's the problem with people. Shemara b'chitzoni u'shalo, lifnim shu'to, v'chasher, umafris parsa. That on the outside, there are a lot of people that look pious, they look religious, they look like they're bali tzedakah, they look like they're such members of the community. Aval geira lo yagur. But on the inside, haynu b'chinas pnimi u'shalo, but on the inside, but on the inside, they're not such a good person. We unfortunately know this in our generation. We live in a generation of chitzonius. We live in a generation that is defined by the external. One of the travesties of social media is that it's built an entire culture of people who promote something on the outside, who give one image to the world, but we know that on the inside, behind the scenes, that's not how they live their life. That's not the person they are. That's not the integrity and the dignity with which they carry themselves. And that, perhaps, is one of the great challenges of our generation. We are a chitzonius dikka generation. The challenge of our generation is to mix and to match what you are on the outside with who you are on the inside. In Gemara terms, they call that tocho kibaro, which means that your insides have to reflect your outside. The problem with the chazir was that there was a differentiation, there was a bifurcation, there was a hypocrisy. On the outside, they were one way, on the inside, they were the other. He says, we know Jews that are like that, we know people that are like that. That on the outside, they might be religious, they might be pious, they might be loving, but on the inside, their midos don't match up to that. And then he says in the next paragraph, Vizehu ikuv hagi'ula. That is what's holding back the redemption. In other words, the same way that the pig, once the ge'ula comes, it's going to do tshuva, so to speak, and it's once again going to be kosher. That's what the Bas Ayin says. Vizehu ikuv hagi'ula. That is what's holding back ge'ula. Shein ben David ba ad sheyitayer achazir. That the same reason that Mashiach's not going to come until the chazir is tahor, in other words, when its insides match its outside, so too, says the Bas Ayin, that is when our ge'ula is going to come, when our insides match who we are on the outside. I think there are many applications to this. There are applications for the values you have as a family, the value you have inside the home, matching the values you have outside the home. It has to do with who you are as a Jew, that the way you are on the inside has to be, or the way you are on the outside to the rest of the world, has to be who you are on the outside. We don't just work on ourselves as external Jews. Being Jewish is not just coming to shul and going to the Daf Yomi Shir and chuckling during Shmona Esrei and having my name on the tzedakah list and on the prayer list. That's not the totality of Judaism. That works if it matches who you are on the inside. If that doesn't match your midos, if that doesn't match your dignity, if that doesn't match your integrity, if that doesn't match the values that you live by when the lights are off and when no one's looking as well, then that's what's holding back the redemption. He says it's only when, the same way the chazir, when the ghoul is going to come, when they're synchronized between who the pig is on the outside and who the pig is on the inside, so too, he says, zehu ikuv ha-ge'ula. That is what's holding back the redemption. Shein ben David ba'ad sheyatayer ha-chazir. Hainu sheyala geira via pnimios libo kamo sheyaro betalfav. It's only when our externality, who we are on the outside, matches who we are on the inside, that is when the ge'ula is going to come. I thought that's a very powerful idea. I'd heard the idea about the pig before, but the way he draws it out and the way he relates it to us, and I think the application for our generation, which is something that we struggle with so much, because a person needs to get a shidduch, so they go to this yeshiva, they go to that seminary. Because a person wants to be in this social circle, so they behave a certain way or they act a certain way. Because that's not who we are. We are only when we match our outside Judaism with our inside Judaism, with our behavior on the outside and our behavior on the inside. That is idea number one from the Bas Ayin, learning the lesson of the pig. So you could ask, when your wife, you go home and your wife asks you, what'd you learn about? You could say, I learned about pigs. Okay, we have to be more like pigs. All right, that was idea number one. Yeah. So that's what he quotes from the Or HaChaim, who quotes from the Gemara, Rabbeinu Bachya, who says Lama Nikra Shma Chazir Sha'asid Lachzor Lios Mutter, because he's going to return to be mutter. That was the chiddush of the Or HaChaim. The Or HaChaim says that's why he's called a Chazir, because he's going to return to being kosher. When is he going to return to being kosher? That's what the Or HaChaim says, because La'asid Lavo Yala Geira, he's going to chew his cud. In other words, the kashrus that the Chazir depicts on the outside is finally going to match his inside. Right now, there's a discrepancy.
I understand, but lachzer means that it previously was kosher. Oh, uh-huh. That's what I'm saying.
Where, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, yeah. It's a loose definition of yachzer.
Okay, we'll take it.
Okay.
Yeah. Wasn't there I don't know where it was, but the Sanhedrin, or where they passed the test.
The Gemara talks about that. The Gemara talks about that for a while they didn't want to allow many people into the base medrash because they said you have to be tocho kabaro. And then Hillel eventually allows people in. But I don't think we ever give up on that attribute of tocho kabaro. We still aspire that who we are on the outside and we reflect to the world is who we should be on the inside. Okay, idea number two comes from Rabbi Sachs, which I see when it got subsequently photocopied, got cut off a little bit, so we'll do the best that we can. Rabbi Sachs has a magnificent idea. If you came for nothing else, it should be for this idea. Rabbi Sachs starts off by saying, have you ever felt inadequate to a task you have been assigned to or a job you have been given? Many people feel that other people have too high an estimate of their abilities. In other words, we don't believe we belong. He says, if that's the case, then this parsha is perfect for you. Why? What happens? It's opening day of the Mishkan. It's opening day. And the starting pitcher, Aaron HaKohen, he's ready to come. And what does Moshe Rabbeinu say to him? Krav el Mizbeach. You have to come near towards the Mizbeach. And Rashi says, what is that strange language of Krav? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to tell Aaron to come near to the Mizbeach? So Rashi says, it's because Aaron was feeling ashamed. Aaron knew that he had sinned with Chet Egel, and therefore he didn't feel worthy. He didn't feel worthy. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, why do you feel ashamed? Lekach Natsarta, essentially, this is what you were chosen for. First, Rabbi Sack says, there's a name for this syndrome of what Aaron was feeling. It's called the imposter syndrome. The imposter syndrome. Doctors feel that on July 1st. By the way, never go to the hospital on July 1st, because that's when all the residents who have no clue what they're talking about are in charge of you. The nurses know a lot more than they do. I mean, they still might know more than a lot of the doctors, but okay. Right? And that's imposter syndrome. But then he says the following. If you look on the bottom of page number 4, left-hand side. He says, reading this narrative, it is hard to avoid the conclusion that it was Aaron's weakness that allowed it to happen. In other words, what allowed Chet HaEgel to happen? What allowed Chet HaEgel to happen was that Aaron was trying to pacify the people, that he was trying to buy time. It was he who suggested that the people give him the gold ornaments, he who fashioned them into a calf, and he who built the altar before it. When Moshe saw the golden calf and challenged Aaron, what do these people do with you? He replied evasively, they gave me gold. Okay, so this was a man who was profoundly and rightfully uncomfortable with the role, with his role in one of the most disastrous episodes in the Torah. And you feel for Aaron. Here was Aaron involved in Chet HaEgel. All of a sudden, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, you're going to be in charge of atonement for the entire people. And Aaron goes, me? I'm riddled with sin. It's my fault that Chet HaEgel happened in the first place. And you're telling me that I'm going to represent the Jewish people in atonement and in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Says Rabbi Sachs on the top of page number 4, right inside. Was this not hypocrisy? Was he himself not a singer? How could he stand before God and the people and assume the role of the holiest of men? And you kind of understand what Aaron was thinking. Moshe, however, did not simply say something that would boost his confidence. He said something much more radical and life-changing. He says, it was for this you were chosen. Go to the next paragraph. That, implied Moshe, is why you were chosen. You know what it is like to sin. You know what it is like to feel guilt. You know more than anyone else the cry of the soul to be cleansed, purified, and wiped free, stain of aggression. What you think of as your greatest weakness will become something in his role, probably his greatest asset, in this role you are about to assume your greatest strength. So what Aaron assumed was his greatest weakness. He knew what it was like to sin. He knew what it was like to beg for forgiveness from Hashem. He knew what it was like to want to be cleansed and to be purified and to be given a fresh start. Aaron knew that more than anyone else. Moshe Rabbeinu says, that's why you were chosen. Because who better to lead the people? So what you, Aaron, view as your weakness is actually your biggest strength. You're going to channel that. You're going to turn that into your biggest strength. Rabbi Sachs said, how did Moshe Rabbeinu know that? How did Moshe Rabbeinu know that your biggest weakness can actually become your bigger strength? He says, because Moshe Rabbeinu, that was his life. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Hashem and says, Mi Anochi, who am I to go to Paro? Ani Arel Svasayim, I don't know how to speak. And what does Hashem do? Go to page number 5. Hashem comes along and says, no, Moshe, it's because of your speech defect that I want you. Why? Because great speakers throughout history do not always make great leaders. Great speakers throughout history often become dictators and tyrants. They misuse. They're able to sway people so powerfully that they end up misusing that power of speech to sway the people to do the wrong thing sometimes. It was specifically Moshe, because you didn't have that ability to speak, that you realized that you were chosen for a purpose. In other words, it's not just because your charisma was going to drive the people, but it's that you're the mouthpiece of me, Hashem, and that's why you were chosen for the people. And therefore, says Rabbi Sachs on the left-hand side, what Moshe thought was his greatest weakness, namely his speech impediment, was in fact one of his greatest strengths. The point here is not simply, I'm okay, you're okay, acceptance of weakness. That is not what Judaism is about. The point is the struggle. Moshe and Aaron, in their own different ways, had to wrestle with themselves. I love that word. They had to wrestle with themselves. They had to think about what their weakness is. Moshe was not a natural leader. That was his weakness, but it was also his strength. Aaron was not a natural Kohen. That was his weakness, but that was also his strength. Moshe had to accept that one of the most important qualifications was what nowadays we would call his low self-image. But what operating from a completely different mindset, the Torah calls his humility. That was his strength. Aaron had to understand that his own experience of sin and failure made him the ideal representative of a people conscious of their own sin and failure. What Aaron viewed as his weakness was actually his strength. If you think about the greatest speeches you've heard, the greatest drushes, the greatest motivational speakers, it's not just someone who's getting up there and pontificating. Generally, it's the story of someone who overcame a weakness and made it into a strength. It's someone who, despite a weakness or despite a failure or despite a sin, was able to overcome that and grow into something bigger. Those are the stories that inspire us. That's the story, says Rabbi Sacks, of Moshe and Aaron. And therefore he says, oh boy, this really got cut off. The key, according to Rashi in this parsha, is the role Moshe played in this critical juncture of Aaron's life. He had faith in Aaron even when Aaron lacked faith in himself. Aaron just saw the weakness. Moshe saw the potential for that weakness to be channeled into the greatest strength. This then is the life-changing idea. Okay, listen to this. What you think of as our greatest weakness can often become, if we wrestle with it, our greatest strength. Think of those who have suffered tragedy and then devote their lives to alleviating the suffer of other people. Think of those who, conscious of their failings, use that consciousness to help other people overcome their own sense of failure. I could tell you stories and stories and stories. I could tell you drushes and drushes of drushes. People with speech impediments who went on to be some of the greatest lawyers arguing cases in front of the Supreme Court. We all know stories of people who could have looked at a weakness, could have looked at a setback, could have looked at a sin, could have looked at a mistake and said, that's going to define me. Or instead, people who, despite that or because of that, used it to propel them to even greater heights. Sometimes what we perceive as our weakness can actually become our calling. It can actually become our strength. Moshe, what he thought was his weakness, became his calling. Aaron, what he thought was his weakness, Moshe said, no. You understand sin more than anybody else. You're going to be able to guide people. And therefore, what better representative of the people than you, Moshe Rabbeinu? And sometimes the things we go through in life, the experiences we have, the mistakes that we made, the challenges that we were born with, instead of being the roadblock for us, it actually paves the way for us to find our calling and to find meaning and purpose in our lives. I don't think Rabbi Sacks was joking when he says that this is a life-changing idea. It is a life-changing idea. And I strongly encourage everybody, whether it's at your Shabbos table with guests, Shabbos table with kids, Shabbos table with grandkids, to use this Dvar Torah. Because there's no greater lesson that you could teach people than the ability to turn what they might perceive as weakness or as failure or a sin or a mistake and to be able to channel that into a strength where you can help other people, where you can change other people's lives. How many stories do we know of doctors who became doctors because they saw sickness or because they saw difficulty? Of people who accomplished great things, not despite their weakness or despite life experiences, but specifically because it. That is what Rabbi Sacks says is the message of the Parsha. Aaron HaKohen did not want to come on opening day. He said, I'm not worthy. He says, I'm the guy who sinned at Chet Egel. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Krav El Mizbeach, come here, Aaron. It's specifically because of that, that Hashem wants you in this position. Your weakness is your strength. Your sin is your calling. And that's where you're going to find your purpose. Aaron HaKohen, it was not despite his weakness, but it was specifically because of it. That is idea number two, which again, I think is like mind-boggling and life-changing. So we saw idea number one was from the pig. The pig right now, there's a discrepancy. There's hypocrisy between who the pig is on the outside, who the pig is on the inside. Says the Baas Ayin, that's all of us. That sometimes who we project on the outside who isn't who we really are on the inside. The Geula is going to come when we synchronize the two. We need to make sure that the version of yourself that you portray to the world is actually the version of yourself, at least that you aspire to, on the inside. And we spoke about the malady of our generation of social media is that people project one image to the world. And then yet, we know that their lives are in shambles, that their relationships are in shambles, that who they are is an embarrassment. We as Jews try to live, we aspire for a life of Tocho Kabaro. What the Gemara refers to as where my insides match my outsides. Idea number two, Colonel Roy Sachs, of Aaron's hesitancy, viewing his sin as his weakness. Moshe Rabbeinu coming along and helping him realize, no, that it's specifically your weakness that becomes your strength. How did Moshe Rabbeinu know it? Because that was the lesson Hashem taught Moshe, and now Moshe was passing it along and teaching that lesson to Aaron, that sometimes our weakness ends up being our biggest strength. Idea number three comes from Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Zecher Tzadik Kadosh Levracha, comes back to the pig. We're focusing a lot on pigs tonight, not because of the meat and the chont. Okay, the Pasuk tells us, Ma'ala Geira Bebehema Oso Tochlu, that as opposed to the first idea from the Basayin, where we spoke about if it chews its cud, if it doesn't choose its cud, so you cannot eat it. Here the Pasuk says, if it does chew its cud, you specifically can eat it. So Rabbi Kanievsky says the following, Chashavti leperish, Masha ma'ala geira, simin taharu. What a strange sign of kashrus that an animal would chew its cud. Right? Again, without getting too graphic, animal chews. To my understanding, it goes down to the stomach, then it regurgitates up, and he chews again, and then it goes back into the stomach, right? That's our anatomy of the animal, of the pig is correct. So says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, ever wonder why Hashem made that a sign of kashrus? What an arbitrary, bizarre, strange sign of kashrus. And he says the following, Kimala Geira, that process of chewing, swallowing, regurgitating, chewing, swallow, regurgitating, Hainu male umakia ochel mimeeha umechazera sosa. That process, what are you doing? Vinea atzlan lo yasa kein. Someone who's lazy would never have the patience to do that. In other words, think about the time that it takes for a kosher animal to properly eat, chew, and digest food. There's a process. They don't just stuff it in their throat, right? Like our parents would say, stop eating like a pig. No. To eat like a kosher animal is you got to eat. There's a deliberate process to it because he's got to do it again. And then they do it again. He says a lazy person would never act that way. Picture the image at the dinner table when a kid, is never happens at our house, is shuffling food in their mouth, right? So a lazy person actually does that, right? Someone who is not lazy, so they're willing to go through the process of cutting their food down, and swallowing it, and doing it again. I know it's gross, but he says, "Aatzlan lo yasa kein." A lazy person would never do that, because they wouldn't want to put in the time and energy. Lachein, he says, therefore, chewing the cud, simen tahoru, it is a sign of purity, because a Jew is not lazy. A Jew can never be defined by laziness. A Jew is someone who's deliberate. A Jew is someone who doesn't mind taking the time to get it right. A lazy person's going to cut corners. They're just going to swallow without chewing. But a Jew, someone represents Jewish values, they're the opposite. They're not lazy. They don't mind going through the process. They don't mind being deliberate. He says that's what the Gemara in Pesachim, we just had this, and the Korban Pesach, and Erev Pesach, so the Gemara tells us that there were three groups of people. There were three groups on Erev Pesach. There was the first group, they brought their Korban Pesach. And then they went out. And then a second group came, and they brought their Korban Pesach. And then there was a third group. And the Gemara says that third group, Tana, he nikres kat atzlanis. That third group was called the lazy group. Says the Gemara, it says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, ma kasuv kan. Why are they the lazy group? Hey, if I get to the airport late, and they're boarding, and I'm the last one, right? And I'm in you always get like your number, and you could tell by your number whether you're going to have to gate check your bag or not, right? So if I'm number like 9 on Delta, because everyone else is going before me, so that doesn't make me lazy, says Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Yeah, exactly. It is. Elaba lomer, what the Gemara is trying to teach us, is afshe mitzvah begilun kitos, even though there's a mitzvah to have three groups of people, aval kol echad sarach lios rishon. But that doesn't give you the excuse to be part of the last group. You got to be the first one boarding. By the way, my wife and I have this debate every single flight. We first got married. I think it was actually our first argument we got into. We had to fly to Florida. I was staffing a YU trip to Florida, and they call boarding, and so I get up, and my wife's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm boarding the plane. She's like, well, why would you want to sit on the plane any longer than you have to? Like, I board last. And I was like, do you not understand my type A anxiety that you think I could sit here and watch everyone else go ahead of me and put their bags on and me not? So, okay, now we board first. That was our compromise. But that's exactly the Gemara. I'm living the Gemara in Pesachim, where it says, Ruchaim, can I ask you about Lomar? Afshah mitzvah begimel kitos, even though you can board last, you have to be first. Now, why do I love this idea from Chaim Kanievsky? First of all, I happen to abhor laziness. I think it's a terrible midah. And Chaim Kanievsky says, "Lachin simen taharu." That is the definition of purity of kashrus. We are the anti-lazy. We are filled with zealous. Think about Avram Avinu. Vayashkem Avram baboker. Every single time, Avram was doing things with alacrity. He was doing things with excitement. He wasn't waiting for other people. We spoke about it on Pesach a little bit. Why did Aaron go out and he chopped all the wood to bring to sacrifice Yitzchak? Which is what happens when children misbehave. No, sacrifice Yitzchak. Says Rav Kook, you don't think Avram was going to find wood over there? No, the answer is Avram didn't want to wait. He didn't want to take any chances. So he didn't want to accidentally miss the garbages the next morning. So the first thing he did when he got home from yeshiva is he took out the garbages. I mean, he cut the wood and he took it out. Right? Avram was defined by zealousness. That is a Jewish midah. But I think it's more than that. We live in a generation of what I call sound bites. The soundbite generation says that I'm going to look at a snippet and I'm going to make a judgment. Or I'm going to listen to a soundbite and I'm going to formulate an opinion based on that soundbite. And what we fail to appreciate is that sometimes things are not black or white, but there's gray and there's nuance. And in a soundbite culture, you lose nuance. And you make uneducated opinions and uneducated decisions because you are living in a soundbite generation and you're not taking the time to be deliberate in trying to understand things. I think that's part of what Rabbi Kanievsky is saying here. What is the process of the animal chewing its cud, swallowing it again, chewing its cud? It means it took time. It means you couldn't rush to it. You couldn't just stuff the food down your throat and be done with it. You had to be a little bit deliberate. Chazal tell us this explicitly. And to me, it's one of the most unbelievable Mishnayos in all of Shas, where the Mishnah says, right, first we say, Moshe kibel Torah miSinai, Masara liYeshua, Yeshua zakenim, zakenim lan shekinesa gedola. They have skipped a generation there, right? And they said three things. What are they? What's the first one? No one? No one wants to be a guesser? Okay, I'll tell you some of them. None. One is, Vemidu Talmidim Harbe. You should have lots of students. Okay? What's one of them? Asusiagla Torah. You should make a fence around the Torah. Okay, I get that. I get why, in the opening of Pirkei Avos, you want to tell us to have a proliferation of students. You have to spread Torah. I understand Siag LaTorah. You have to protect Torah. What's the third one there? First Mishnah. Have a Mesunim Medin. You have to be deliberate in judgment. You don't think that's strange? Like if you sat at your Shabbos table and said, okay, we're making a book of ethics. We have three shots for the first law in the book of ethics. Okay, at a time when Torah is at risk. What are those three things? I could maybe come to Vemidu Talmidim Harvey. I can understand that. You have to have lots of students. You have to guarantee the continuity of that which you're teaching. I can understand Siag LaTorah. Judaism is under attack from Western liberal values that are into. I get that, okay. Would you say Avi Mesunim Adin is one of the three most important things in Judaism back in the times of the Tanaim when they were writing the Mishnayos? I don't know that I would have. But I think Chazal were so prescient. And in their infinite wisdom, they understood that there would come a time called our generation, when we would live in a soundbite generation and people would be making impressions and making decisions without really thinking it through, without getting to know the rest of the story, and without looking at the full picture. And they would make snap judgments. Their crazy research done about, and I've quoted this before, it's done out of Princeton, of they showed pictures of Senate of people who won the Senate races, Senate candidates, in like four consecutive elections. And they showed people the pictures for a flash second, and then they asked them to predict who won the Senate or congressional seat and who didn't. And just by looking at the picture for a fraction of a second, with overwhelming odds, they were able to pick the winner of that congressional seat. And basically, I think it's Alexander Todorov, I think the guy's name is. And basically the idea was, is that we think we're like thinking things through. When you go into the voter box, or when you look at an ad for a candidate on TV, and you think you're thinking about their positions, most of the time you are making a snap judgment on whether you think they look senatorial or not, or whether they look congressional or not. We're not thinking things through. And I don't need to get into the world of online debating. This is a plague of our generation. And that's why Chazal already thousands of years ago had said, Sunim Adin, that we have to be deliberate. We can't rush to judgment. The world is not black and white. It is filled with nuance. And nuance means that you take the time to be deliberate about it. And therefore, says R' Chaim Kanievsky, that is why it's a simon of, why it's a sign of kashrus. Eats it, takes it back up. Eats it again, takes it back up. Eats it. Why? Because that's the heavy mesunim adin. That is what it means to be deliberate. That is the symbol and sign of what it means to be a Jew. So we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. Idea number one from us of the Bas Ayin about the pig, where we talked a little bit about having our inside match our outside. The version of ourself that I show to the world should match who I am on the inside. Idea number two, what I really think is a life-changing idea from Rabbi Sacks, that your weakness can be your greatest source of strength in the lesson, in the message that could be to your entire family. And idea number three was from Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Why is it that one of the signs of kashrus had to be that the animal ate it and then regurgitated it and ate it again, chews its cud? So he says, because a lazy person would never do that. I expounded upon that and said, I think that's what it means, Veve Mesunim Adin, that we have to be a little bit more judicial and deliberate in how we come to opinions, and be open and willing to learn from other opinions, and to look at all sides of an issue before we rush to judgment. And with that, I wish everyone a great Shabbos.